Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. This hour, why politics is an inescapable part of how we see sexual harassment. I usually save my letters segment for the end of the show, but the reaction to Kathy Werzer's Franken interview that aired on Monday, and then my discussion about it with Ken Rudin, has raised some pointed questions. No sooner had Kathy's interview with Senator Franken aired than angry and in some cases profane email and tweets appeared. Not from listeners who were disappointed or upset by Franken's admitted behavior, but email and tweets from women and some self-described feminists who were furious about Kathy's line of questioning. Edith wrote, "That was the worst interview I've ever heard you give. If you're such a great investigative reporter, why haven't you checked into the possible motivation behind the women coming forward?" Judy tweeted to Kathy, "Seriously, you show your Republican devotion in your horrible, unprofessional interview with Al Franken. Stick to doing the weather up north." And one tweeter called Kathy, quote, "nothing more than a Republican whore." All of these comments came from women. I also heard from women who were irate that I raised questions with Ken Rudin about Franken's failing memory on the details of the unwanted touching. Here's a bit of that discussion.
There are not a shortage of Democrats who said that Al Franken should resign.
Well, and what's wrong with that? I mean, that's their opinion as colleagues and politicians.
Right. That's what all I'm saying is that we're in this conversation, we're somehow just putting Al Franken and Roy Moore and others in the same conversation.
Bonnie wrote in to say that I was, quote, ranting and raving, and added that I owe Ken Rudin, Senator Franken, and the NPR audience an apology for my, quote, unprofessional and harassing questions. She adds, "Why do you think that there are not more accounts of Republicans being brought forward?" Margaret emailed to also question my questions about Senator Franken's memory. "Few people in high people contact roles," she said, "can recall every interaction. I'm sure you can relate to that, yet you had no space for it with Senator Franken's interview statements." Now, I got a number of emails that I can't read on the air because they are so profane. This brings us to today. NBC fired Today Show anchor Matt Lauer this morning. Here's Savannah Guthrie talking about that.
Just moments ago, NBC News Chairman Andy Lack sent the following note to our organization. "Dear colleagues, on Monday night, we received a detailed complaint from a colleague about inappropriate sexual behavior in the workplace by Matt Lauer. It represented, after serious review, a clear violation of our company's standards. As a result, we have decided to terminate his employment."
Lauer has not yet responded to calls from reporters, but are you noting, as I am, the difference between how sexual harassment allegations are being handled in business, media, and entertainment, and how they're being handled in politics? How is partisanship influencing our perception of these allegations and our discussion about these allegations? As our guests join us, I'd like you to think about this. Be honest. Are you likely to give a politician you voted for more leniency on sexual harassment than one you didn't vote for? Are you seeing evidence of our political polarization emerging in our own reaction to sexual harassment in politics? Now, I'm looking for well-considered comments here. Don't call up just to vent. Don't tweet just to vent. I think this is a discussion that is timely and that we need to have. And I'd love it if you dig deep and think about this and then call in. 651-227-6000. 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at CarrieNPR. Our guest for the conversation, Ty Coleman, is a professor of English literature at St. Kate's University, where she writes about feminism, intersectionality, and culture. And she's with me in the studio, and welcome. It's really good to have you here.
Thank you. It's so good to be here.
Caitlin Flanagan is with us. She's a contributing editor for The Atlantic, and she's been writing about sexual harassment and politics, and she's with us today from L.A. And Caitlin, welcome to you. It's really good to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Caitlin, can I, because you write a lot about politics, I'd like to ask you what you think of how this is unfolding in the political realm and how this is unfolding in media with Matt Lauer today and some of these other firings and dismissals in other parts of industry. What do you see? Do you see differences?
Well, the first thing is it was just fascinating to me to hear you describing what's been going on in Minnesota in terms of the reaction to these accusations against Al Franken. You know, I've been following it much more as sort of a national story, but the response that you got that you just described was really stunning to me. And the notion that just as a total, again, outsider of the state, from the state, the notion that anyone would think that NPR is kind of a Republican operative or a cabal of people trying to advance Republican agendas, it's usually the target of the absolute opposite insinuation. So that was just really interesting to me that people were making those kind of accusations. I think that in the largest possible sense, none of us really has a grasp on what's going on right now nationally, and all of us have a very strong opinion on it. You know, this current story, it's not like foreign policy. It's not like the new tax bill.
Right.
It's not something that a few people know a lot about and most people are a little in the dark about and nobody spends too much time talking over the dinner table. It's something that everyone feels so strongly about. And when you have someone like Al Franken, who's deeply loved and has such a, you know, a warm and, you know, well-known personality, you have one issue, and then you have the other issue of scale, which is, you know, if he's done the things he said, those are not admirable things, but certainly they don't rise to the level of the violent rapes that Weinstein has been accused of. So I think we're all sort of saying, we don't know what's going on yet. We don't know how widespread, we don't know how bad this is. And the idea that it's that some kind of political agenda is operating under it, I think that is the holdover from the Clinton scandals of 20 years ago. And right now, I think we're all reeling from it.
A lot there, and I'm really glad you brought up the part about scale, because I want to talk about that. Ty, do you think, as Kathy and I started talking about the reaction to this, the first thing that came to my mind was, there were people who were in some amount of pain because they didn't want to hear about this from somebody that they support. And it was kind of a case of shooting the messenger, something that's not unfamiliar to journalists. What else do you see going on here with the reaction?
Well, I agree, but I want to make it a little bit more complex. I would say we don't know how to talk about it, so I commend you and other reporters for taking this on, right? Because you can't say you're in it and not of it. That's a Stevie Wonder quote. But I would argue that this is something that's been going on since the beginning of time. It's just that we don't have a frame in order to make sense of it.
And why is that?
Because part of oppression is that you make the frame invisible in order to perpetuate the oppression of women. We have to understand that rape and sexual assault is a crime of aggression, power, and control. And there's an intersectionality of power in that motion. So when we talk about sexual assault, it's one thing to talk about the victims. It's one thing to talk about the reports. It's another thing to talk about when those reports rise to the level of when power intersects with the value of women. And I would argue at every state of the level, right, from the actual victim to the powers of Congress, the most powerful people in the country, we start to see how really important being a woman might be or how important women's issues really are. And of course, it's complex because then those challenges to those issues come from both women and men, and we're forced to be in oppositional polls of choosing justice or personal interest. And some women are convinced that their personal interest might be with men or politics as opposed to their gender or their position as a female victim.
Right. Let me grab a call because we have a lot of people that want to get in on this too. Alara in Apple Valley. Hi. Thanks so much for calling. What are you thinking about this?
Thank you. And first of all, I want to applaud your last guest for bringing intersectionality into the conversation. I think it's so important to focus on the power dynamics more so than the emotional response, because it really is about the system in place. And right now we're experiencing a bunch of people in power, especially political power, coming to terms with the fact that the people they've been oppressing are starting to rise out and call out that abuse of power, which is why I think that other politicians within the same party are quick to oftentimes defend or at least be a little bit more lenient with their colleagues because they're protecting their sense of power, while the public is also kind of struggling with a rampant sense of tribalism right now, and people want to, it's like a choice between, do I empathize with the victim in this situation or the survivor in this situation, or do I continue to defend my tribe? But I also think that people are starting to consider empathizing with the people that have been assaulted and understand what their experience is and also see what their reactions have been. With Al Franken, there was a forgiveness. There was forgiveness extended from his accuser.
Mm-hmm.
In Anthony Weiner's case, which was another Democrat, there was no forgiveness because he had blatantly just subjugated somebody, exploited somebody.
Laura, hang on one second, though. And we're going down this path of, and I want to stop us and understand this better, where, Caitlin, I've been hearing from a lot of people on Twitter again, through emails, how dare you equate what Al Franken did with what, as Laura was saying, Anthony Weiner did with what Roy Moore. That doesn't strike me as very constructive. I want to understand why that feels good for people to do that and why we better be careful about doing that. What would you say?
Well, we hear this all the time that, you know, that Al Franken shouldn't be thrown in the same category as these other men. But I have to say, I haven't seen a lot of evidence of anyone saying that he does belong in that category. You know, he issued an apology to one of the accusers, and she accepted the apology. And people can rant and rave about somebody should be removed from a job or whatever, but that hasn't happened. So I think we're in a position in which, you know, everybody's worried about a witch hunt. Everybody's worried about a man who may have done something at one point inappropriate, but not criminal, and that he's going to lose his job over that. And there's a lot of fear around that. But I think what makes this whole situation ever since the Weinstein allegations so interesting is we haven't seen a lot of situations where men are saying, she's lying, this didn't happen, I have no record or history of it.
Right.
And the other larger thing is that, you know, obviously grabbing someone on the rear end is not a rape. On the other hand, it's pretty accepted. And I really remember the first time, you know, I'm 56, so I, you know, old now, but I remember the first time it happened to me on a very crowded bus and a hand just darted out from nowhere and grabbed me. And I remember telling my mother, and I just assumed she'd be outraged. And she just said, oh, what a bastard. Like, that's just your life as a woman in the world.
Wow.
That, you know, if you want to get on a crowded subway and go to the museum, if you want to travel in a city where you're in a crowd of people, you know, that's part of it. And you can either try to shape your life around it, try to save up money for a taxi, get used to it, yell at him, whatever. That's part of your life. And so the idea that women would be angry, that women would say, wait a minute, I don't like the fact that someone I've respected and seen as a friend of women, a champion of women, seems like probably has done at least that much. I don't think there's anything wrong with women talking about it and calling him out.
I mean, and here's the other thing, Ty. I think we can hold multiple thoughts in our heads at the same time. I think we can say, this is what the allegations against Senator Franken are, and he has apologized and acknowledged them. This is what Roy Moore... I think Alora had something going here when she talked about tribalism. There's a reason we want to bring out, I think, the false equivalent. Well, he's so much worse, so forget that on that side.
Well, I agree. I think we do have to be able to occupy positions simultaneously in order to figure out what it's about.
We
can't afford to alienate anyone. But I also want to push back to say, for example, that slight touch on the bottom is the first step toward dehumanization. And the moment we start to qualify the difference between an unwanted touch on the bottom versus something more extreme, that's the moment we're allowing that oppression of women to start. I would argue, and again, I say this with all due respect, and courts can make decisions, But the moment we rationalize that we can somehow identify what a perpetrator looks like, we are perpetuating the myths that allow for sexual assault to continue.
And those myths go into a little bit of detail on
that. The fact that you could identify something that you can say, no, that's what the person looks like. I think part of us understanding how dreadful this is understanding that it could be the nicest, most loving, wonderful, greatest advocate who could be the violator.
Right.
And I also want to push back and say, I don't really think we're talking about it. I mean, if you look at the data, for example, American Indian or Alaskan Native women are 3.5 times more likely to be sexually assaulted in the United States than any other group of women. So if we're really talking about sexual assault, I would say we also have to talk about the intersectionality of race and color and nationality and other status to really get at this issue. Because in some ways, we're still framing the debate, I would say, primarily with white women. And I'm not saying that white women aren't sexually assaulted, but if we leave the frame to only white women, we're leaving out a huge part of this power structure that works to oppress not only women, white women, but all women of color and different people, and particularly other people who aren't white and heterosexual.
Nicole says on Twitter, I won't make excuses for Franken, and I get sick at the victim blaming and how we're trying to undermine his accuser's credibility. However, his saving grace is his humble acknowledgement and apology. Interested to see the report from the ethics probe. If you've just tuned in, it's a conversation with two guests, Ty Coleman from St. Kate's and Caitlin Flanagan from The Atlantic, to ask how politics is influencing the way the discussion is going, our perceptions of sexual harassment. And I've noted on a day when Matt Lauer got fired, media, entertainment, business seem to be moving more assertively to deal with this. We'll see. We'll see what happens with that. This gets so much more complicated and murky in politics, and we're talking about why that is. I'm asking you this morning, as you weigh this conversation, if you'll check in a bit with yourself, are you more likely to give a politician that you voted for some leniency on these allegations? And don't come back to me with, well, it's not as bad as what Roy Moore allegedly did. I want you to check in on how you see this in the frame of your own politics. And are you seeing evidence of our polarization, that political polarization, emerging in the way we're talking about sexual harassment in this moment? 800-242-2828, appreciating the serious consideration that you're giving as listeners here and callers. 651-227-6000, and on Twitter at CarrieNPR, where Josh says, something that's starting to concern me greatly is the charge towards the puritanical sexuality of the 18th century. Everyone has behaved poorly like this, men and women. That doesn't make it okay or right, but we're ignoring the fact that humans are fully sexual beings. Caitlin, what do you hear in that?
Well, a lot of sweeping historical presumptions there. But again, I think that this is getting down to this fear, which I don't think is well-founded at this point, that there's some kind of a witch hunt going on and that, you know, a wink or you know, Woody Allen said, we can't get to a point where a wink in the office is going to mean the lawyers are going to come down, you know, hard. People are afraid of that. But again, the things that we have seen have not been on the order of every workplace has to be hyper sanitized with no flirtation at all in them. People are very afraid of that. And I think that men in particular are afraid, and understandably so, that maybe their behavior in the office, maybe someone could imagine something that they did or interpret something that they did, or actually have a very valid claim that something that they did in the office was really not just inappropriate, was some kind of harassment. And I think because you're getting so close to issues of people's employment, you know, I have to say, when I woke up this morning and saw that Matt Lauer had been fired overnight from the Today Show, I really was stunned.
I was too.
You know, and there's just this idea that people are taking this very, very seriously. And when you sort of go, if they were going to say this, you know, if the criminal courts would say, obviously, there's a range of different kinds of behavior. If it's going to include things like someone maybe grabbing someone on the bottom, which, as I said, I am absolutely no supporter of, I think there are a lot of men in the country right now saying, could this mean my career? I'm not in show business. I'm not in one of these flagship you know, fields, but could this come down to my kind of employment? And could someone in my job say something about the past? And could I lose my livelihood? And I think that is pulsing through just as powerfully as the political motivation, concern about political motivation.
And can we push it beyond the surface? I mean, I want to go back to this notion that we're sexual beings, and I think we're missing the point. You have to understand that sexual designation was used to build the institutions of the United States. So it's not just a function of aggression, power, and control. It's a function of excluding women. It's not a coincidence that the majority of people in Congress are white and male. So this is a function of keeping women down. So when we talk about how this is public now and we don't see the majority of the majority of accusers that are seen as credible are white women. For example, statistically, the number of white women raped in a lifetime is 17.9%. For African American, it's 18.8%. But overwhelmingly, what we're seeing in the media is overwhelmingly white. I think what's happening, if I could be generous, and I say this with compassion and empathy, we're having to be confronted in a very immediate way that's uncomfortable, maybe how white women were complicit in the construction of white supremacy because they willingly suppressed their gender issues and their power as women for the sake of whiteness. Mm-hmm. An example is the governor in Alabama very clearly said that she believed the accusers, but it was more important to have a Republican in Congress. So right in that moment, she is choosing white, male, Republican, or whatever, over being a woman. And so I'm saying we're missing the boat if we don't see the frame that it's bigger than this. It's about every institution in this United States was constructed on the oppression of women. And now I would argue that we're having to confront how sexuality was a part of that, not to mention how it's racialized.
Let's hear from a number of listeners here. To Laura in Eden Prairie. Laura, thanks so much for waiting. Good to have your call. What are you thinking about?
Well, my original comment was you've just covered so many other things since then.
Laura, I'm sorry your phone is cutting out, and I really apologize for that. I know you waited a while. Try us back. Let me take a call here from Penny in Eagan. Hey, Penny, hi.
Hi there.
Hi, what do you want to contribute to this?
Well, I just want to say I appreciate the questions that you and Kathy asked, and I think we need more of them. I mean, the fact is he has apologized, but he hasn't admitted his behavior. I think the I don't remember defense is not a good one. I'm a professor. I interacted over the years with thousands of students. I don't remember all the interactions. I can tell you categorically I didn't put my hands on any of their behinds. So I appreciate your questions. I had a similar experience to you. I was on my local DFL organization Facebook page and my local Indivisible Facebook page, and I simply posted a comment saying, I think that he has more to explain. I think he has more to answer for. I think that his apology kind of blamed women and avoided the real issue, and we need something better. Mm-hmm. And I got trolled to the point where on the Indivisible page, the administrator had to close down the comment stream because of the trolling, and a lot of the same kinds of response. Now, not entirely. There were also people posting saying, yeah, I share those concerns. So it was a mixed bag. But some of the comments, and some men and also some women, were really vitriolic and personal. And it was a little bit, I mean, it was a little surprising to me because it was definitely this tribal circling the wagons. If you're not for us, you're against us. You're a traitor if you bring up the questions. One person said, oh, you must be a closet Republican. And I'm like, I am the most liberal person I know. I'm like way more liberal than you. But it just, it was really disturbing. And so I say, yes, this is an important discussion. And I really applaud you for having it. And like I said, I think we ought to ask more tough questions.
Penny, really, I really appreciate it. Thanks for the call. And thanks for listening to these earlier conversations, too. And starting one on Facebook, a call here from Beth in St. Paul. Hi, Beth. Thanks for waiting. Hi. What are you thinking about?
Well, I had called in because I was a former DFL political operative, and I recently moved into the area of advocacy for sexual violence victims. And I have been so incredibly disappointed at the not just elected officials on the DFL side, but also other people that I've worked with personally in coming out with these letters of statements of support specifically for Senator Franken. I don't think anyone's really talking about what those letters are intending to do. I think in a way, they are absolutely trying to drown the voice of victims who come forward by having a whole chorus of women signing on to a letter stating that, you know, well, this never happened to me. That was not my experience.
Exactly.
So, and that is what really I find disappointing. I thought actually initially when the first allegation came out with Tweeden, I thought he handled that better than any other elected official I've seen so far. It didn't excuse the behavior, but then that's what I think what really, you know, I think people are, you know, and that's what I heard initially is that this isn't as bad as Ray Moore, but what people are not talking about is that sexual violence is a spectrum. You have things from inappropriate comments to touching to groping to, you know, sexual assault.
And the dehumanizing that Ty talked about on that spectrum, right, Beth?
It is.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Go ahead.
Absolutely. And that's you know, no one is immune to this. And I think the fact that someone like Senator Franken, these allegations have come out, I think the first one that I think gave everyone was shocking. But then to see that it happens to be a pattern, and the fact that Senator Franken was on this, you know, on this legislation that wanted to give more trauma-informed, you know, interviewing skills to law enforcement, and, you know, him really being a champion for our causes, I think that was, for a lot of us, really disappointing. But there has to be a reckoning here. Why is it okay for him to stay in the Senate? Why is it okay for us as Democrats to call on, you know, Senator Schoen and Tony Cornish to step down, but we're not ready to make those same calls for one of our own?
And I think that
is a politicizing. That is what it is right there. By not doing that, you are politicizing this.
And Beth, I appreciate that. I just want to say, asking the harder questions of Senator Franken and Ken Rudin and the discussions we're having does not mean we're saying, yes, it must be. I don't have an opinion on whether it all ought to be treated the same. But the tough questions have to be asked. And that seems to be the thing, Ty, that has angered and offended. I mean, we're hearing from callers who are hearing this, too, in their own personal experience.
Well, it's scary. I mean, I can imagine this, as the caller said, it's a reckoning. This is a major paradigm shift.
Right. And that's frightening.
It is frightening for everybody. And that's why we have to be compassionate and hold each other and allow us to simultaneously be in the same space so that as we move forward, we get to hold each other, because we're all victimized in this. But yes, it's a major paradigm shift, and it could actually change the corridors of power, because we have to also ask, what power did these perpetrators have so that they were able to do what they did for so long? What systemic structural things existed that allowed this to take place? And when you confront that, that can be scary for a lot of people. Also, it can be scary to acknowledge how we might have unconsciously participated in that if we didn't realize our own oppression in that.
Caitlin, this is something that I was talking about with my boss this morning, who's a woman, and we were saying, how is it that Matt Lauer and Charlie Rose and others felt immune right to the consequences of this kind of behavior for apparently years with Charlie Rose? I don't know the details on the Lauer. What does that say, too? Have you wondered that?
No, not with Charlie Rose, because it's always been pretty well known about him. I've known many women who have worked in journalism or in and around him have said that over the years. But, you know, I think everyone keeps circling back to this word power. It's so much about power. And when you're one woman, one mere woman in this structure, maybe a young woman, maybe just with your college degree, and you're coming out against this person who's world famous, who has this show that everybody watches, who has this huge reputation. And a lot of times in these kinds of events, such as with Charlie Rose, you know, the woman may have in the beginning participated in, you know, what she thought of as, or what he might have perceived as, flirtation. Sometimes that's something women will do to kind of misdirect it or not to feel that they're in conflict with this person, so that young woman can feel a lot of guilt over that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the word we just always keep coming back to is power. And if you want a job in one of these exalted fields, you know, certainly, you know, you and I both know in the media, the people at the top have all the power. And if in any way you cross them, in any small way in media, if you cross someone at the top, you'll be atomized.
Definitely.
And so,
that gives them the ability to do these things that are just abhorrent and make us all, and make me really angry to hear about what's been going on to these women.
Well, we have historically given privilege to men, I mean, from the beginning. And if we go back to Thomas Jefferson, the father of the Declaration of Independence, not only has he inherited his slaves, he's inherited his wife's slaves because she cannot own property. And then he owns slaves, and all of slavery is about power, control, and aggression of sexuality and sexual production. So it is entwined in our flag like the colors red, white, and blue. We can't get away from it. I think part of us then recognizing it is that seeing it in the present time, but also seeing in the past time and not ignoring it, similar to race and other issues of discrimination.
Shannon says on Twitter, I have friends who are more concerned with who will take Franken's seat if he resigns than how his actions could be affecting his victims. They attack the victims using the oldest tricks in the books and defend their behavior to me, a sexual assault harassment survivor. I also want to acknowledge, I hear what Ty and Caitlin are saying about this is a paradigm shift. It's uncomfortable. There's upheaval. So I also understand that women can feel conflicted about this. This is a, you know, tumultuous time here. And I think that's reflected in some of what we saw on these morning news programs from Gail King and Savannah Guthrie. So I want to play what Gail King said on news of Charlie Rose's firing, and then we'll hear from Savannah Guthrie just this morning on news about Matt Lauer. Here's Gail King.
You know, I've enjoyed a friendship and a partnership with Charlie for the past 5 years. I've held him in such high regard, and I'm really struggling because what do you say when someone that you deeply care about has done something that is so horrible? How do you wrap your brain around that? I'm really grappling with that.
You know, for the moment, all we can say is that we are heartbroken. I'm heartbroken for Matt. He is my dear, dear friend and my partner, and he is beloved by many, many people here. And I'm heartbroken for the brave colleague who came forward to tell her story and any other women who have their own stories to tell. Mm-hmm. And we are grappling with a dilemma that so many people have faced these past few weeks. How do you reconcile your love for someone with the revelation that they have behaved badly? Mm-hmm. And I don't know the answer to that.
So you heard Gail King and Savannah Guthrie. They're reflecting on what this means that their colleagues and longtime journalists Charlie Rose and Matt Lauer have been fired from their organization for sexual harassment. Off air, Ty, I was saying to you, and I'd love to hear what Caitlin has to say, too, is I'm seeing a number of comments on Twitter who are saying it all could be a frame-up with Senator Frank. How do we know this happened? Lucy says, the biggest problem with Franken is the allegations against him aren't credible. I don't see that as they just won't accept the facts. I see that as something deeper that we've been talking about today. How do you see it?
Yeah, I see it as denial, and I see that in the most generous way possible. It's like a slope that has been hundreds of years of slope that suddenly has been righted, right? And everything shifts at once. It's overwhelming. I want to say without being judgmental, if we ignore this, it will be to our own demise. For example, think how many students, medical students, might have been sexually harassed and dropped out of school, and that female medical student might have had the cure for cancer. So if we continue this, this will hurt our communities. It will hurt our democracy. So I would say we have to say that it is about justice, and we have to hold each other because I think the shock is real, but we have to get over it. Otherwise, we're going to be hurt in the long run. Look at what people are reporting that Russia did in our elections because they were able to appeal to things like racism, right? These long systemic injustices that over time have made our democracy overall weaker. And I would argue this is one of these issues. If we don't solve this, if we don't come together, it will be to our demise in the future.
Caitlin, I was thinking about this as I watched Nancy Pelosi on Meet the Press on Sunday. I don't know if you saw some excerpts of that. Yes.
Yeah.
So she was asked by Chuck Todd about Representative Conyers, a longtime member of Congress, of the House, who has paid off women over these allegations. And her answer was startling. It was, he's an icon. She simply did not want to denounce this, even in the face of these payoffs to people who had accused him of. What do you see in that? I mean, and some of the tweets that I'm reading here. What is this?
Well, I don't identify as a feminist, and I haven't for about almost 24 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And people always are surprised because I write so much about women and about equality. And the reason for that is that when very credible allegations against Bill Clinton came up of sexual, I'm not talking about Monica Lewinsky, I'm not talking about consensual things, I'm talking about assault.
Mm-hmm.
The most prominent feminist in the country stood up proudly and loudly and defended him.
Gloria Steinem.
And said, if you're voting for women's issues, we are on your side and we will defend you against other less powerful women who have something to say about what you did against them. And I was so shocked. I had been such a strong self-identifying feminist before then. And the idea that politics would come before standing up for women saying that they've been sexually assaulted was stunning to me. And when Nancy Pelosi said that, I thought, here we go again.
I know.
You know, if you voted on the correct side of the ledger, this woman in power is going to say, give you a free pass.
Well, she's trying to argue that civil rights is more important than women. And that's nothing new. I mean, I know I'm going to get thrown under the bus for this, but look at Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement and what was done to women of color. They're still men, and wrong is wrong. And we have to acknowledge that. And will it be hurtful? Yes. Might it be my father or my brother or my husband or my male colleague? Yes. But we have to stand firm.
Call here from Stacy in Lakeland. Hi, Stacy. Thanks so much for waiting.
Yes. Hi.
Hi. What are you thinking?
So I just wanted to address your question, your original question. When I hear a Republican or a Democrat has gone ahead and had, you know, accusations of sexual assault, my knee-jerk reaction, and I'm an objective person and I pride myself in being, like, thoughtful and thinking about things, the Republicans, who I understand are not supportive of women's rights, I just do a judgment. Yeah, of course. Oh, that doesn't surprise me. They would have done something like that. A Democrat does it, and I think, I'm thinking about it. Well, you know,
right.
And it's totally unfair, and I'm thinking about that now, and thank you for bringing that up. Can I add that one of the things that I think could happen because of someone having a sexual assault is, I think two things need to be considered. One, what they did, what the person who assaulted them, and two, a combination of how the woman was affected, because some of us might get grabbed in the butt and have a really traumatic experience from it, and I think that that justice needs to be taken. And some of us get assaulted more violently, and it doesn't, for me personally, it didn't affect my life, so I didn't feel like I needed to have so much judgment with that.
So you're saying that was also influential in the way that you saw where these allegations were coming from, who they were about?
Yes, yeah. I can't make a value judgment about the other woman's pain. I only know what my pain is, and we need to
take
what she says and her pain into consideration.
And I think that's a great point. And I just want to say that the research is very clear that the act of violence is not just the incident itself. There's post-traumatic stress disorder, all other categories or experiences that victims of sexual assault have throughout the rest of their lifetimes if they're not the victims that succumb to suicide. So it's an act that happens in a moment, but it is perpetual and it continues. So we have to see the real violence of it. And I also want to say we live in a country where we have a history where, as citizens, we've been socialized to think that there is a less of two evils. So we've always been choosing between what we are convinced is our self-interest versus justice. Think how many things that we have rationalized because of racism. We could say, oh, yeah, but. And so this is just another one of those things. And so not only is it an opportunity for us to learn about this specific issue, but it's also an opportunity to call in our civic engagement, our democracy, our definitions as citizens, and our ethical and moral decisions around the justification of rationalizing things that we know are wrong and expecting that the end will justify the means.
Caitlin, two things from Twitter, I think, that go to what Ty just said. Danielle says, shouldn't we as liberals choose to stand for the women who have been harmed and for a sea change in politics? How progressive can we claim to be if we cling so desperately to the status quo? And then, Caitlin, here's Todd, who says, Trump has been accused. No one's asking for his resignation. Really? Double standard. I want to dig in on the Trump thing because that's always like the Trump card. Well, how bad could it be with Franken? Because look at Trump. Tell me what you say about that in conversations on this.
Well, I think, you know, there was a call for his resignation in the sense of a call for him not to be elected.
That's right.
And people, you know, decided, well, we're going to elect him anyway. And I think that we're in this moment, or maybe this is how it's always been, which is very disheartening to me, where, you know, in the 60s, we sort of got to a point where we said, hey, someone's private sexual behavior isn't my business. You know, it doesn't matter to a lot of people, you know, if somebody maybe had a consensual affair or maybe someone is gay, that these are not things that have anything to do with their ability to execute the office, you know. But now it seems to be sliding over into, well, also he could have done some sexual assaulting and that doesn't affect my judgment of his behavior in office. And I think that is really disturbing. And I think, you know, I'm not even an armchair psychologist, but I do think a lot of us women who have had these experiences over the course of our lives, the way we've dealt with it is kind of to diminish them in our memory, to put them in a place, to change our behavior so that we feel safer
right.
from those things happening again.
Right.
But I don't think that the things that happen to us over the course of our lives that were, you know, being the targets one way or another of unwanted male sexual aggression, I don't think men can really understand what that feels like over the course of a lifetime. And I don't think that we as women, I mean, the way we survive as women is we put it really deep down and we say, well, it wasn't really, you know, I wasn't happy that that happened. But, you know, I got myself together and
for
I'm fine
sure.
now.
For sure.
Right.
So
and
I think that it is traumatic.
Right. But we don't just choose to do that. That's a function of a structure.
Right.
So, for example, statistically, for every African-American woman that is raped, there are 15 who don't report. And all the reasons they don't report, and one of them is that because they don't want to deal with the police or they don't believe that they will be believed. And that's a function of the society outside of ourselves.
I was going to say the society kind of rewards in a perverse way to take that route.
Absolutely. So we have to see the women, the decisions that women make, and I want to give them agency and respect and power, but that is a function of hegemony and oppression. Going back to Trump, you know, it's kind of like my Kanye West meme moment. Like, we shouldn't be shocked. He's a mirror. He's exactly who we are. So everybody wants to rationalize him as this individual. Of course he's going to get away with it, because how many other men who have his sexual designation, his power, his wealth, get away with it? So of course. So to expect anything from him, that means you would expect something different in society. And I would argue that Trump is not going to be held accountable till we as a society hold everyone else accountable.
Greg says on Twitter, Carrie and Kathy, as journalists, you both did a great job reporting on Franken pertaining to giving politicians a break over other professions. Yes, absolutely. I've witnessed this. It's simply another byproduct of the ongoing divide between the GOP and the DFL. And to the phones here, to Laura in Eden Prairie, she called back. Hey, Laura, good. Glad you could get back in.
Yeah, thank you very much. Well, so much has evolved in the conversation that you kind of spoke to some of the things I had to say. But I really agree with your one guest there about getting this right. I definitely see myself as a feminist. I relate to what that one caller said about, well, I immediately suspect that a Republican who I think is, suspect, I immediately, oh, yeah, well, of course they did it. And, you know, and I do. I have to check myself on those kinds of things. But, for instance, on this Matt Lauer thing, my first reaction was, wow, how do we know this is true? He's immediately fired, and they didn't say it was credible or,
well,
maybe they just needed
well, wait a
more
minute.
Background.
Caitlin, you were going to say? I'm sorry, I thought I heard you. Laura, I think the fact that NBC saw the details of the allegations and took the decision to fire him, I think we can believe that they were serious allegations.
I suspect that's true, too. I think it would be wise to say so right from the beginning, and it will probably come out. But as I was saying, really my point is I feel so strongly that we have to get this right, that we as women need to support women. Women need to be believed, on and on with all of that. But we're talking about human relations, and it's never going to be entirely we'll never be able to legislate it to a point, you know, crime is crime. And workplace bad behavior can be defined, too.
Mm-hmm.
But there's always going to be a lot of gray area. And we need to be clear with ourselves that we don't accept any of this bad behavior, particularly in power positions, but we also have to be able to look at each case and each individual and go, okay,
well,
how bad is
it? That's exactly, and make your own decision. I mean, this is the other thing that I want to say about this. In no way were Kathy's questions to Senator Franken about, do you think, as there is conversation going on, you should step aside and Governor Dayton should, you know, appoint another a woman to your seat? Those are questions that need to be asked. And Senator Franken knew he was going to be asked those questions. And when I bring this up in these conversations, they are questions to be discussed. They are not Kathy or me saying, and this is what should happen. I think there's some confusion around that as well. Here's Lauren. Go ahead, Caitlin.
What I think happens with Al Franken, particularly listening to this reaction in Minnesota, is what happens in a family when someone's accused of this. Al Franken is just a super lovable guy, you know? And when his book came out a few months ago, I just listened to a few long interviews, and I was like, oh, this is the greatest guy ever. Like, I've always sort of known of him, but he's so warm, he's so funny, he's so self-deprecating, he's so personable, that if he were my own senator, you'd have almost a family feeling about him.
Uh-huh.
And then when the accusation came up, there's this incredible desire to protect that person. And to say, and to protect your sense of that person, and to protect your allegiance to that person. And I think that that visceral, very deep response to what's happened here and the conversation is maybe what's motivating that. But again, I would just have to say, as an outside observer, to anybody who thinks that NPR is in any way enacting some Republican agenda, I just have to tell you, from a longtime journalism, that's flatly not true at all. So I think people are assuming political intent when none exists.
I have to say that the accusations of political bias on one side or the other were not, you know, really, I felt nothing about that. I don't think Kathy did either. It's the viscerally nasty and mean, insulting emails and tweets that came flying at her and then at me.
And
that's the thing where I thought, we really do need some transparency around this. We have to talk about it.
And I don't think, you know, I don't want to justify people being mean or derogatory, but you could also take that as a symptom or a measure of how internal the sickness is, that our own internal misogyny is so deep that we strike out in anger, almost like someone needing help, but in denial. I like the family analogy. I think that's appropriate. And then I just want to push back on that and say, but family members own slaves. Family members rape people. Family members do bad things. When we stay in that position of trying to protect the family member, that's a frame then that gives them cover in order to perpetuate the bad things that they do. So we have to really have to move out of that. I also want to say that as we move forward, women have to stay connected. We don't need to be separated or demonize each other or become antagonistic. Recognize that we're all victims, but we're all sisters, and we have to stay together to move forward and hold each other as we continue this discourse.
Caitlin, thanks so much for being part of the show. Ty, thank you. Really good to have you in the studio.